You're listening to episode 8 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in sunny Philadelphia.
David, we've got a great collection of items this evening, sort of spans a number of different topics.
Yeah, I think this is a good cross the board. We've got the U.S. Justice Department reports on its use of drones since 2004. We've got an online multiplayer UAV game where you'll be flying your own aircraft and racing them. A NASA competition to demonstrate UAS capabilities with a cash prize. A very interesting map showing which states have anti-drone laws, and one that we will keep track of because it'll be updated on a regular basis. We have the Iranians claiming they've reverse-engineered the Lockheed Martin RQ-170 Sentinel, and we'll be flying it shortly. And we also had a very interesting article on qualifications for UAS pilots.
Our first news item comes from ABC News. This is Justice Department spent nearly $5 million on drones. Well, the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice has released a report, and this is showing the usage of unmanned vehicles by the different agencies that fall under the Justice Department. In total, they add up to about $5 million, they say, since 2004. So there are a number of agencies that have been using these things, David.
Yeah, the FBI alone spent $3 million. The ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, spent close to $600,000. And $1.6 million has been awarded to at least several local police departments and nonprofit organizations. That's a really interesting one that wasn't really delved into a lot. But the big topic was the FBI's use of drones.
Yeah, and the report says that they've used drones 10 times since 2006. And there isn't a lot of detail about how they were used or when or where. There's a little bit of that. But they mention that these are being used for kidnappings, some search and rescue missions, and some drug and fugitive investigations. All that sounds kind of legitimate to me.
As we're going to delve a little bit deeper into this article, it's more about privacy. You know, kidnappings, probably the most famous one they talked about in the article was the Georgia kidnapping where the man hid in the spider hole with the kid about 2 years ago. But, you know, drug and fugitive investigations, they all, you're right, sound legitimate, like they and perfect uses for a drone where you want to observe somebody from a distance without causing undue distress to the person you're observing.
Now, one of the first questions you ask, of course, is did they go to the FAA for permission to fly these missions? And the Inspector General says that, or appears to be saying that they did get the approvals from the FAA. So they're not at least totally running rogue on that.
No, and I guess you could also say that the FAA's been fairly cooperative with the whole process. The fact that they are going to the FAA and the FAA is giving them permission shows that there's a bit of a symbiotic relationship and it's not really a turf war. They're trying to work together to a, like we've seen with the fires earlier, a couple of episodes back.
And on that issue of privacy that you mentioned, David, and due process here, the Inspector General is saying that court warrants are not needed in this case because the areas that they were monitoring with these drones were open to public view. And that being the case, there was no reasonable expectation of privacy, which is sort of the buzz phrase that that you want to watch for.
That's the buzz phrase you always see when you're walking around New York and every street corner has a camera on it. You have no, you're out in general public with no expectation of privacy. So,
and they also said that these drones, they didn't physically trespass on private property. The implication there is that they were remotely sensing or sensing from a distance, as we've talked about in the past.
Yes, we go harping back to our chickens, watching our chickens from a distance.
That's right.
And remember, you own the column of air straight up from the ground to ad infinitum, but you could be away from that, and with a good drone with a very large camera, you don't need to be in that column and still take quality photographs.
That's right, David. And this report does recognize, according to this article, some of the civil liberties or privacy issues that surround this. And there's a recognition from the Justice Department that expectations for privacy around the home, in other words, outside of the home, but around the home, those expectations are not completely clear. Another issue, and I believe we did talk about this before, maybe with the chickens, is that with many of these unmanned vehicles, they have a pretty long duration, or they can. They can loiter for a long time. They can observe for a long time. And it's sort of an open question as to whether or not that creates different legal implications when you're tracking someone.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Is it fair to say that having a drone hover over your house for over 24 hours, is that a fair expectation of privacy? And I think that's one of those ones that we're going to have to track over time, because it's definitely the technology has exceeded the expectations. So that's one we're going to have to track duration, which you don't really think of, you know.
Right.
Most people, when they get a warrant, or you know, if anyone's seen bad episodes of television where they're having a stakeout across the street, usually they have a warrant for that stakeout. In this case, you now have a drone and you don't need to do the stakeout, and it just needs to hover there until it runs out of battery power. That's a very interesting point, and one I guess we're going to follow on, just like our chickens.
That's right. I was happy to see that one of the recommendations from this report is that the Justice Department forms some sort of a working group to take a look at drones and establish whether or not there's legal policy issues that need to be addressed and policy needs to be created. So I think that's a good step. You know, overall, I think there are people that have been a little bit nervous, a little bit apprehensive about the government, the Justice Department, the FBI, the ATF, and so forth, using these in ways that may be improper. At least just based on this report, to me, it feels like they're kind of doing the right thing, taking the right steps, not running amok, as you know, some may worry. And that, especially with this working group, they have a path to address these issues.
Yeah, I agree. I think basically they're taking baby steps, and you know, it's only been six times in the last 3 or 4 years that they've actually used drones. They're erring on the side of privacy and doing the right thing instead of letting the technology run away from them. So I think we'll keep focus on the DOJ for a while, but sounds like two thumbs up for us, and I guess we should probably move on to the next story.
Great. Now, this is about a UAV virtual reality game, or a project about that. That kind of intrigued me when I saw that article, David. This sounds like it's something that could be kind of a blast.
Literally and figuratively. Yeah, it's virtual reality. We've, especially in the gaming world, has been around for a while now, and this is going to be kind of virtual reality meets Reno with some dogfighting. What you have is you have crews of two that will fly modified radio-controlled airplanes, but this wouldn't be a normal radio-controlled race. You would be working remotely, like you would be flying a Predator or a Reaper. You may be flying it somewhere farther away, and you have a pilot, and what you'll have is a race of three aircraft, and the aircraft will be equipped with cameras like you would see in a NASCAR car. You got a front view, a side view, and a bottom view, and a top view, and you're going to go through a setup race course with your drone virtually, and then evidently there's going to be a little bump and swap paint also, huh, Max?
Yeah, and I mean, this is both physical and virtual, it sounds like. So there are, in fact, actual modified RC airplanes that are physically being flown, but by you and your teammate and the other two teams remotely from wherever you happen to have your computer, I guess. So that's, I mean, it's kind of a fascinating application. Now, this is just an idea at this point. Right now, the folks who are trying to create this are looking for funding, and they're using this site, Indiegogo. There are a couple of sites like this. If people aren't familiar with them, if you have an idea, a great idea, you can pitch it on Indiegogo or a few other sites, as I mentioned, and ask for people to contribute money to fund the development of this. So it's a dream. It's a request for funding. And they're looking for $300,000. That's their funding goal. And I think they're just getting started because right now they have this very low level of contributions. As with all these stories, we'll put the link in the show notes so you can go take a look at it yourself. And if you'd like to contribute towards the investment in developing this game, you can do that.
Ah, crowdsourcing, another one of those UAV worlds. And maybe, Max, we should probably think about crowdsourcing the UAV Digest.
There we go. I don't think we need $300,000, although, well, if we had it, we could probably find a way to use it.
Yeah, well, that would make your equipment addicts happy, and that would make me be able to go out to NASA Dryden, but not this week due to circumstances beyond our Congress's control.
Yes. Well, so that's an example of how you might contribute some money to develop something unmanned. Next item, David, is sort of the reverse in a way. It's how you might be able to make some money with your unmanned concepts.
Well, there's a tradition in aviation where people throw up money and people do amazing things like Lindbergh, Burt Rutan with Spaceship One. Well, NASA's issued a challenge with a prize of $500,000, $500,000. Part of the NASA Centennial Challenge Program. It's the UAS Airspace Operations Challenge. And we talked about in one of the very first episodes about See and Avoid. Well, this is NASA opening up the See and Avoid spectrum to anybody who wants to try out. They want to have aircraft avoid other aircraft. And this will be taking place April 28th through May 2nd for 2014 at the Ohio-Indiana UAS Center and Test Complex at Camp Atterbury Range near Edinburgh, Indiana. And that Camp Atterbury Range is one of the sites that is trying to vie for the UAS testing site for the FAA.
Well, this will be an interesting event. Even if not as a participant, I don't know what kind of arrangements they have for observers, but this might be awfully fun to watch as a spectator.
Are you saying that I should plan a trip to Ohio or Indiana for my birthday?
That's an outstanding idea, David.
Or should I say our birthday?
Sure. So there are some objectives in this challenge. What they're looking for is to demonstrate what they say is the ability to remain well clear of other aircraft and also to obey the same rules that other air traffic uses. And that's important in terms of safely integrating unmanned aircraft into the same airspace as manned aircraft. So this is phase one. It's a multi-phase kind of an effort. And I guess, David, the objective here is to be able to demonstrate that your unmanned craft can operate in that environment with others flying around it.
What was really interesting was, besides having working with aircraft that do detect you using ADS-B or automatic dependent surveillance broadcast, the other part of it is uncooperative aircraft. Maybe aircraft that don't have ADS-B or aren't communicating. Will the UAV or UAS be able to work in an environment where it safely protects both aircraft by itself without any interaction with the other aircraft?
Yeah, to me, that makes this really realistic or more realistic. It's probably, well, it's non-trivial, but it's probably relatively easy if everything flying around in this space is all equipped with ADS-B. But as we, you know, look at the real airspace and project the growth in ADS-B, you can envision that not being the case, that some will have it, some won't. And so your craft may be smarter or have more capability than the others. And being able to operate safely in that kind of an environment is pretty realistic, I think.
Absolutely. That's the phase two part of the challenge. So I think we'll mark our calendars for the end of April at the beginning of May, and we'll see what happens with the challenge. And maybe we know somebody at NASA, and maybe we can get some press passes and be part of the challenge. So we'll look out for that for you in the future, folks. And while we're there, we might as well check the map to see if our state is a no drone zone. Mother Jones, the website, is actually put up a internet-based map of the United States and showing you whether your state has anti-drone laws or UAV laws or none at all.
I think this is very cool. I was having some fun with this. It's color-coded. So for those different categories that David mentioned, there's a different color. So, for example, red for no laws restricting drones. Another color for laws that restrict use for private citizens. Another color for laws that restrict use by law enforcement. And then a third color for laws that restrict both. And as you move your mouse over this map, if you hover, well, here's Idaho, for example. Hover over Idaho, it says, Idaho prohibits drone use by private citizens and law enforcement without a warrant, with some exceptions. So it doesn't go into the huge detail, but it's sort of an overview there. And it tells you the date it was passed. This, in this particular case, this Idaho law or laws were passed in April 11th of 2013. Most of the states on this map show is no law restricting zones. I think it's, what is it, David? 9 states that have some kind of laws.
Yeah, 9 states have restrictive laws. So I'm sure that over time, and Mother Jones has said they're going to keep this up and running, and maybe we might have to figure out having a between this one and the map last week, we might have to have permanent links on our website or something to this. So we can keep track of it as state changes colors. It's going to change over time, and it's interesting to see that there's varying levels. Idaho was probably one of the more radical ones where it was both individuals as well as police forces aren't allowed to use them except with warrants. So we'll see how it grows over time, and you know, it's going to be interesting if legislatures pass these kind of rules for states that are trying to vie for the FAA the FAA test centers. Today I saw an announcement that Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, and Delaware are all trying to get together now to form a consortium, because most of these are becoming multiple states. So suddenly I think the Delmarva Peninsula will become a test center for FAA drones.
Hopefully Mother Jones will
be true to their word.
Be true to their word, yes.
Speaking of being true to their word and on the other side of the planet, the TASNIMS news agency reported that the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps of the Iranian Army says that the Iranian version of the Lockheed Martin RQ-170 Sentinel has been going to fly in the near future. They have basically destructed and rebuilt the aircraft, reverse engineered it from the captured drone that it captured in 2011, and they're going to fly their own version of it. Now, Iranian news sources and the Iranian press is not necessarily reporting everything correctly, but it'll be interesting to see if they actually do make the announcement that they have a Sentinel flying. And we'll see how devastating it was to the U.S. drone industry that they captured it. The argument was that we lost control of it, but they've always claimed they've captured it. But we'll see. This is kind of one of those interesting stories that doesn't seem to go away. It seems to have a lingering presence as far as UAV news.
You know, one thing that I wonder about this, David, is let's say they do get whatever it is that they've put together or are working on, do get it to fly. I mean, what is it going to mean in terms of the technology that they've incorporated into it? And will we be able to know? Obviously, I think it'd be relatively easy to put up something that flies that looks like the Sentinel, but whether or not it has much technology on the inside, we may not really be able to tell.
Yeah, until we capture one. There's challenges here. You can take them for face value that they captured it and reverse engineered it, But you wonder what kind of technology basis they have to understand fifth or sixth generation UAV technology. The RQ-170 was probably one of the single most advanced drones we had at the time. Lockheed Martin and the Pentagon and the Air Force basically, when it became clear that it was captured, basically dismissed it as it was old technology and we've moved way beyond it. But it might still be a quantum leap for Iran, who has gotten a couple of captured Israeli drones from the Palestinians and has had some relationships like we talked about on Airplane Geeks, where predators have been stalked by F-22s. And so they're like the Chinese. They're desperately trying to catch up, and any little thing that will help them leapfrog slightly forward is still a advance for them.
Yeah, something like this could help them move forward, but we always obviously have new technology, new developments, the next best thing in the pipeline. So while they're busy, let's say, trying to leap ahead in terms of their abilities, the rest of the world hasn't stood still. And you know, that's, so for them, it's a moving target, I guess is one way to say it.
And they're constantly playing catch up.
That's sort of the name of the game when it comes to military technology, I think. As long as you keep the other guy in that mode of trying to catch up, then you're still ahead.
I think that not just military aviation, but I think we could also say that's technology.
Yeah.
It's the nature of technology, and it's healthy because we get better products right in the long run.
All right, so this next item, I guess, David, you uncovered this link through a tweet?
I did. I have set up on my Hootsuite account hashtag drones and hashtag UAVs to keep track of everything that's just been chugging along. And at OnTheFly305 tweeted a link to the Journal of Aviation Aerospace Education research paper that looked at what was it take to qualify a UAS pilot. The only printing requirements came from the 2008 FAA Interim Operational Approval Guidance. The key word in that is interim, and, you know, as they say in history, there's nothing more permanent than something that's temporary or interim. So clearly the FAA has not updated it in 5 years. Basically, it starts talking about like what we talked about last week with Australia, setting standards for UAV pilots that are equivalent to mainstream pilots.
Right. And another aspect of this is when you establish these requirements for UAS operators, presumably they wouldn't be identical to the requirements for pilots of manned aircraft. But the author in this case believes that they're close enough so that requirements for UAS operators and pilots could be incorporated under the regulations that already exist and that already govern pilot qualification. And you could do that by modifying the standards that are currently used by the U.S. Department of Defense. The belief is that the FAA maybe only needs to make some minor changes to the existing FAR, the Federal Aviation Regulations, to certify UAS operators, again, using type ratings as it does now. I mean, that's probably a sensible approach. Let's not create something totally new, totally clean sheet of paper that represents sort of a parallel pilot certification program.
And it gives all of our pilot friends another rating for them to go chasing.
Yeah.
Like after your multi-engine and your seaplane, you might as well go get your UAV rating. So I think we should follow this along so that we can encourage some of our adamant people against UAVs that maybe they really want to add another rating to their ticket.
So this PDF report, we'll put a link to it in the show notes, and certainly, if you're interested in looking at this logic and seeing how it matches or not with what you've been thinking, then please go ahead and do that.
Yeah, and actually, if you're a pilot, after you read it, send us some feedback saying what you think and whether it's a practical way of looking at it or are they completely off the rocker?
Sure.
But speaking of feedback, we're starting to get stuff coming in. this goes out to Charles. Charles wrote to us and said, I'm in the Rob Mark camp, for those who don't know and don't listen to our other show. That's our co-host on Airplane Geeks. Drones and unpiloted air vehicles will be a tough sell, not only to pilots, but to general public. And the article he's using to support his argument was the fact that the Department of Defense has gotten requested by the government of Djibouti on the Horn of Africa to move their Reaper squadron out of the one airfield that's used as their international airport due to some accidents. They've decided that since it's a very tight airfield and the government, the Djiboutian government, is concerned about their citizens who, you know, it's a poor nation and it's right up against the airport, it's not so good to have remotely piloted aircraft flying around with other aircraft using it as an international airport. So the Pentagon has moved the squadron out to the desert in response.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the issue with the tilt rotors in the Pacific.
Right, and Japan didn't want the V-22s, yeah. It's the same argument. It's new technology, we don't trust it, it's got a bad reputation, and we don't want it flying over our civilian populations. Right. That goes for out saying from back in the day from flying F-100s to in the late 70s, nobody in North Carolina wanted to be anywhere near Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point because Harriers tended to fall out of the sky around that base. There's a long history of this, and it's, I think, the nature of aviation.
And then we heard from another listener, Paul, on the DARPA program, the HYDRA program that we talked about. So this is a link to the DARPA page, the Tactical Technology Office page, that gives a lot of information about that HYDRA program. That, again, that was the idea that you position stations undersea, load them with drones that can be deployed as conditions warrant. So thanks for sending that in.
And other feedback, and this is probably not to say that all of our feedback we like, but one of the ways we can get the word out is through iTunes feedback. And we've gotten three very complimentary feedbacks, one from T-Master 2011, one by Fates Clown, and one by Lord Stroudwater. We did read them. We saw them this morning, and we actually were really... It really made our day, and of course, that feedback helps promote the show so that other people can find it. If you are a listener and you do love us, go out to iTunes and just take a few minutes to leave a note and recommend the podcast so that more people can discover what Max and I have really become a labor of love for us.
Absolutely.
Well, Max, I guess we better knock it off, to quote Top Gun. So you want to tell us where people can find us?
And if you'd like to visit our website, that's the UAVdigest.com. We have show notes in there, some photos, links to all the articles we mention. And we also tend to link to some of the manufacturers, some of the UAV-specific items in those stories. So you can look for that. On Twitter, we are at UAVdigest. Same on Facebook, UAVdigest. And if you want to send us an email, we have an address. That's feedback@theuavdigest.com. So, David, I think that's it for this week.
Again, thanks for listening, folks. We're really enjoying it, and we will see you next week. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you.